Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Ask Clever Over Coffee, How AI Built This. I am your co-host, John Marino, along with ChatGPT.
Hi.
And today's guest is Scott Gallant, who is doing the show remotely, our first guest remote. So we're pretty excited to have you. Thanks for coming, Scott.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me.
You bet. So, Scott, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and why you're interested in AI.
I don't know how far back to go, but it's been a long journey and it feels like it's just getting started. That's the crazy thing. I'm starting to get more and more gray hairs, but every day, every night, I'm here learning a new thing and I feel like I'm starting fresh. A little bit tired, but it goes back a ways. I went to school for fine art of all things, and I'm this traditional like right brain, left brain battle guy going on in my head. A Lego kid by design, you know, really structured and analytics oriented, but over the years have laid the creative nature of that to bear and been able to help a lot of organizations as a consultant. So I'm a technologist, but I'm also a pragmatic approach with a guy that approaches with creativity. And I've helped a lot of state organizations, a lot of federal governments and sovereign states work through challenges with technology over the years. I've spent maybe 20, 25 years in the education and education technology space, from early ed all the way to higher ed. And now I'm starting to dabble into the senior living space as well with that. So it's just been a long venture of trying to pick up new technologies, figure out where they can best be applied. But I'm long past my days of having those development environments on my desktop and really being in the trenches coding. I can't keep up with the younger guys on that these days. But really looking towards the governance and the leadership side of it, lending into ethics and philosophies of how we apply these technologies, whether we should be applying them, and just having a blast with it.
Good, good. Well, you know what? That was one of the things that I enjoyed from our conversations before the show, was just talking to you a little bit more about what you are doing in AI and what how that looks and operates around healthcare, privacy, and ethics and overall. You know, like what are you seeing as important tools for that? You know, but before we got there, you know, you're with Keyed Ventures, correct?
Yeah, Keyed Systems, yes.
Keyed Systems. And with Keyed Systems, tell me a little bit more about how you started that company and what you guys are working on there.
Yeah, sure. We keep it kind of light. It's sort of a skeleton consultancy where we'll grow out project by project, scale up with teams through the partner network that I have. We focus heavily on adoption of new technologies to improve business process. So it might be a new challenge, but oftentimes it's an old one that just needs to be refactored and people are trying to look at bottom lines or react to the new expectations that consumers might have or new regulations. So while we started building complex ecosystems of technology and as sort of an integrator in the middle, we've lent ourselves into a direction of being more governance oriented. So a lot of the planning for large enterprise, complex mergers and acquisitions or refactors of their entire data ecosystems, we tend to get involved in that type of work. On the early side, helping plan and design. And then throughout that, trying to build a relationship with our partners that we continue to foster an ecosystem that allows partners to come in and out to meet the needs of those clients. And so we'll work through the traditional sense of working through RFPs and RFI processes with our clients and helping them evaluate the right vendors. But on the flip side of it, we're one of those vendors at times too. And we try to advocate and soapbox for industry best practice. So a lot of standards work, best practice work that we contribute to in the greater scheme of things with workforces and committees that are out there led by associations and nonprofits.
So when you are talking to different groups of people and you're talking about AI versus business rules versus automation tools, you know, what's the best way for people, you know, can you break it down for, you know, third grade level of how people should understand the differences between the three?
Yeah, I think it comes down to the simple process of like, hey, what are you trying to get done, right? It really goes back to the basics. I think everybody's, not everybody, but a lot of folks right now are staring like deer in headlights, that there's a lot coming at them at one time. There's a lot of demands. So there's compliance requirements. There's companies and people's lives sometimes on the line with the decisions they're making, of course. But it comes down to, hey, let's really take the moment, take the time to think about what we want to do here. What are the outcomes? What are the values we're trying to return? And, you know, in the work that I do and the people that we keep close, we really keep our ethos and ideals focused on that end result, not necessarily being those goals that keep a company moving, but those things that'll move an economy, those things that are shaping the next generation of business leaders through education, the next generation of health and wellness and well-being. So we really keep our endeavors on those ideals and try to build that into a system of asking our clients what kind of drivers they're trying to get out. What are the focal points for their KPIs that might be very, very local, specific to a system? We level that up to the big concept of, well, what do you really want to do? What do you want the mark to be for you and your organization when you leave this world? And that kind of makes the conversation a little bit easier. It lets people take a break and really look at what and how this aligns to their workforce needs and their company business objectives. Right. From there, we just kind of take it into that design process and work through the basics and work through the requirements, try to understand, is this something that you're looking for, just a quick win? We can design and find the right partners to deliver technology, but can you sustain it and can you maintain it? And I think that's one of the things that when we look at AI in particular, a lot of folks are kind of, we don't know where it's going to go. And so the long-term impacts, as well as the long-term needs for us to maintain and sustain operations, are unknown at this time.
So when you're talking to different companies, have you had companies come to you and they're looking for more of like a closed system AI, meaning an AI internally for companies and organizations, or is it more externally customer facing? What are you seeing from the people that you're working with?
It starts with understanding their maturity level. I think at first there's large enterprises that are less mature, but then there's many that are moving the ball and kind of right along with us in terms of that wagon moving forward. The mid and small organizations don't necessarily have those large teams to unpack what's being thrown at them. And so a couple of the clients I'm interacting with right now, they have great ambitions. They know what's been moving. They've been watching the news. But when it comes to actually the feasibility study of what they're trying to bring forward, they're not aware of the checks and balances necessary or the costs or implications of moving those things. So really, it's a question of maturity at first. Where are you on that spectrum of kind of 1, 2, 3, 4? And once we get in there, we'll find that many of them are trying to build the closed ecosystems where everything is proprietarily understood. It's closed. Security is great. We're not leaking information or leveraging third parties that much out in the ether. We don't have to adapt and adopt to those click-throughs. And, you know, they want that nice contained closed system. Who wouldn't want that, right? But it isn't feasible for everybody. A lot of the technologies and the advancements and innovations that are at our fingertips right now do require a degree of acceptance to the utilization of third parties that are doing this stuff and doing it better than anyone else would be able to do in-house.
So on the closed system, talk with me a little bit more about what does it look like when companies are setting that up and like privacy issues, ethics issues, like how much can be disclosed? Is everybody in a company signing NDAs? So there's IP issues. Like what does that look like?
Yeah, well, taking a look at those use cases, a lot of those use cases are to service end users. A lot of them are just for internal business process. So if we kind of take a look at like the bread and butter for what everybody's using using AI for right now, it's generative AI. You know, everybody's pushing out pictures and text, helping write their emails. And the constraints there might be a little bit easier to place on everybody. Like, let's not push too much private information, sensitive information about people or companies through the process there. Others are trying to make really complex orchestrations for business process optimization and robotic automation of processes and routines. So I think it's worth understanding what the use case is before we get in too deep. But a lot of them are looking for things that are across the board, not knowing what they want. They just know they need to be working with AI. And so I see a lot of folks, you know, grabbing onto it, knowing they can't be left in the dust and now are trying to apply things real quick.
Okay. And so talk to me through some of the issues. And I know you're not a lawyer, Scott, and we're not going to hold you to that. But talk to me through some of the issues of like the difference between copyright and versus privacy.
Sure. Well, we can unpack both of those to some degree, but I mean, copyright, I think, has been an early one that captured the interest of a lot of folks out there. Is my data, I think there's two sides of that that the general consumer of these AI systems are thinking about right now. One is my output, the things that I am facilitating the creation of by AI, is that information that I can copyright? And the other is the inputs, right? The information that they are using, lending the system, or that is being used to help the AI create the outputs it's pushing to those consumers. And is that stuff legitimately able to be used by the AI to produce what it's producing? I think people are thinking, in great deal, like we've got a lot of apps on the phones that are doing a lot of things with AI and pushing out information. It's kind of a stalemate right now on the copyright side. I think we're going to see a lot from the United States in the next 3 to 6 months. There's going to be a bunch of reports that are popped out at the U.S. Copyright Office, and they're going to take a look at a few of these things, as well as looking at the rights around digital twins. So they'll take a look at the representation of individuals out there, and they'll start to unpack through research vehicles that they're standing up right now, some of the best practices, if not guidelines on regulation. I think it was last week or just a few days ago that UK announced a little bit of a stalemate in that regard too, where there's still a battle for, how are things going to be executed? And the technologists in the space are going to go back to looking at data provenance and be able to trace things back to origin as one of the technical solves to help answer the regulations. So I think we have some technologies in place that are going to be able to help us that have been in play for 10 years or so around tracking data back to source, because that's going to be a concern, right? A lot of the stuff that AI is being trained on, it is already regurgitated 3 or 4 or 5 times over from its origin. So it's really interesting to kind of take a look at what's happening on the copyright end of it. And I'm keeping a line out to the ongoing pushes that are coming out, watching that line for regulatory movements that are happening there. Sure. On the privacy end, I think we've got some understanding. I think we've seen a life cycle in the last 10 years around consumers' expectation of privacy change. And it probably started in 2013, around there, right? We've got sort of the Snowden stuff in those days with NSA, and probably a 5-year period. So maybe like 2013 to 2018, privacy for a lot of us was, hey, if this stuff leaks, it's a little bit embarrassing. My friends and family might hate me. I might get fired. This might have impact in my local community and my school. Right? That was really it. It was just about like the stuff that's going on for me. People aren't really thinking about the long-term play of data leakage at that time. But I think we're in a new phase of that. We're in sort of that next life cycle part, which is probably another year or two out that'll finish it up, which is rather than asking a company if they're exposing my information or if it's going to leak out, it's really asking if a company like OpenAI or Google, for example, if they expose sensitive photos or information about its users. And I think we're in a new phase now where people are thinking, I don't want more junk mail to come to me. I do want to understand if this information might have an impact to my health or finance long term. And I know that there's sensitive information that I'm not supposed to leak. But we still don't necessarily know all the impact, right, as general consumers. There's a very small portion of us that are working in that area, but still probably don't completely understand it. What we'll get to in the next year or two might be that we're finally, as general consumers, able to ask better questions about the usage of our information when it's out there. Like, why is this information being asked for? Who might they share it with, and for what reasons? And we're going to understand that the impacts from a privacy standpoint are beyond just leaking private information and having an impact on me, but rather the impact that my information might have on national security, on health research that's being done globally, and things like that. So that new level of awareness is going to start to pump out from it.
So I had a friend of mine that I was having a conversation with recently, and she works for, let's call it, a medium-sized corporation, and we were talking about AI internally, okay? So a lot of the leadership are always looking for ways to use automation tools, to use machine learning, to, cut costs in different ways. And one concern that she had was more so around the privacy of, hey, I work in HR, and when we hire somebody, because they've hired so many, like literally thousands of employees in different roles and different capacities, they can see these different patterns, and they can see how long is somebody going to stay in a certain role or what have you. And mind you, again, of course, companies have had these different programs around for quite a while, but the conversation was really going in the direction of like, you get hired at a company, they already know based off of all these different factors how long you're going to stay with a company and what it's going to take, you know, from a compensation package to keep you maybe an extra year, 2 years, 3 years, or what have you. And then the question was, well, who owns your job history data? You know, like nobody's ever really like, who owns that? Is it okay for these medium-sized and big-sized companies to know all these things, pump it in, and then the AI machine will go, well, you have a 76% chance of Mr. Marino staying around 3.8 years. You know, like it's kind of interesting, right? And then there's some private, I would think there's some privacy. Maybe we were giving up all privacy the moment we walked out our front door. I don't know. And I was thinking about that, and I knew that you and I were going to be talking on the podcast today about privacy. And I was, you know, wondering with you, Scott, like, you know, what are your thoughts on like how far, how much can companies know about you as an individual when they bring you on? And then where, like, do they need to disclose that up front, or do we need to sign off every time we go somewhere? Like, where does our privacy begin and end? And like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we could start earlier in the loop with recruitment and hiring processes, right? Like, I have my resume out there on, and you know, I have my credentials sitting out there on LinkedIn and whatnot, just like everybody else does. And you know, there are numerous parties that are working off of that information. They're doing wonderful things with it, in fact, to determine down to the level of micro credentials, where might my skills and competencies be? And the traditional education space, back to the work I've done there, higher ed, there's a group, the T3 initiative, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and many other providers working in that space, where we were looking at outcomes in early education in K-12 to help advise on the appropriate path through your life cycle, whether you're going to college or not, and put you into trades and condition you to for specific roles, use things like learning patterns and trying to identify the right pathways for you. Throughout that continuum and that process, we're always learners, we're always educators. So if we can think about that from a professional development and a workforce training side of things too, it's just added credentials being slipped onto the ever-going, you know, resume for John. And how can organizations use that to filter through their recruitment processes and strategies, bring them in, and then comes the, okay, as now a workforce member, what does the company have access to and what can they use and how can they use that to move you around the organization too? And say, hey, we have a bigger gap over here. And we know you signed up for this position and this role, but let's start moving you over here. Everything that the predictions are showing show that we're going to gain more value by putting you in this other position that we didn't hire you for. And at that point in time, if the package says no, and it says I'm going to get a little bit more money or a little less, and that's what culture expects, well, is my movement going to be less dependent on where I want my career to go? And is it going to be more dependent on what AI says I should do with my life? And that's an interesting way to think about it.
Well, Scott, I feel like you're being too positive. And this is where maybe I'm old, maybe I'm tainted. But I you know, Scott, like, here's where I get concerned, and help me, since you're going to be the positive one, help me work through this. But like, what if a company knows like my religious practices? Or what if they know, like, how much are they allowed to know about different parts of me? And then, Scott, like, I'm really concerned, like, about, I've seen different AI models up to this point that become more biased. And I'm worried about how that might come across in short term and long term for some of these hiring decisions. And just because, let's say I got a speeding ticket, or let's say I did something when I was really young, like, are they allowed to bring all of that in and then make all of these, you know, language models of, around my work history? You know, like, I know that, you know, some of these things follow you when you're being considered for military positions and different things, but, you know, for different government clearances. But in the private sector, you know, the question that I have for you, Scott, and I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just trying to, you know, get my head around, like, how much is too much?
Yeah, well, I think that's definitely too much. I think we can. So the U.S. is finally working through on the federal side new privacy regulation that is looking like it's getting some traction, or at least some awareness out there through the pushes in the news. And just like other areas of the world, we're taking a look at strict use of data by different data classes, right? Different classifications of information. And so knowing that religious practices, political beliefs, sexual orientation, and those types of things are generally off limits for workforce is something that we can kind of expect is going to be a baseline as regulations continue to be pushed. Whether AI, through a private relationship that I as a citizen and through my consents that I have given other organizations like LinkedIn or whatnot to put me in different groups, or because I've elected to be by choice inside specific groups in Facebook or whatnot to continue to believe what I believe and learn and do all those great things with it, you know, where's the stop happen? And I think one thing that just happened in EU with the EU AI Act is they had a pretty basic approach to it, right? High, medium, low risk uses of AI. And so many of those that you're talking about, we placed in the high risk category. And so what the high risk category means, at least for now, is, all right, a bunch of new controls need to be placed on that. The very high risk use cases are going to be off limits completely. And that's just been written in law over there overseas. So we'll see some of that stuff trickle through. And we can look at the traditional state approach here and the sectoral approach here to see where it's going to be first to market. So we can look at the New York with California's to see, to watch the wire where that's going to happen. But yeah, definitely the workforce using that information to condition the work they're going to give me or to place me or to have expectations. I don't see that as something that's going to be acceptable to the consumer, to the workforce, and the regulators as well.
Okay, so let's say, you know, I'm a Gen Xer, and let's say, for example, I in senior level management, and I've been at the company 10 plus years, and all of a sudden we got a couple new hires in our sales division, and they are the Gen Zers, and Jamie is now working for the company, and we're not getting along, and we have some personality conflicts, and where does that go into the company AI model of, would Jamie be placed with other Gen Xers, or is Jamie going to be a high risk throughout the career at this company? You know, like, where does that fit overall of, like, being too much modeling or too much AI information? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, thankfully, the people that are in charge of workforce laws and regulations, we'll look, let's not consider this a technology problem. First, it's around workforce law. And so we'll take a look at some of the baselines that are coming out of that, irrespective of data, and recognize that there are particular things about a person that shouldn't be thrown into the workforce mix to position groups of teams together and things of that nature. Or, you know, when is person Y getting a little bit too old for that position? We need to kind of roll them back a little bit. If their performance is swaying and starting to falter, okay, well, now we have legitimate reasons to think about moving individuals within the organization. When it comes to the data side of it, we're going to see continuous innovation by all the technology companies that want to be the, I used to proclaim I was a mad data scientist doing all this predictive analytics work. And the words that we would use at the time were data-driven decision-making, right? And predictive analytics. And really all we're seeing is an advancement of that stuff and machines now able to do that stuff, identify patterns and move things a lot quicker with AI. And so it's some of the same concepts that we used to lay out before in terms of being able to use piece of information A, B, and C to try to identify patterns and predict where we should put people. The education space.
Sure, but
you know, to play devil's advocate, Scott, like, okay, so that's great in theory, but if you need my help, if something breaks within the company, if a piece of software that's been around as long as I have in this company breaks and nobody knows the work through or how to use it, or now you got a brand new team who's touching this software and the old team is gone and nobody knows what to do with it, but they can't get rid of it because it's cost prohibitive, so they got to work with it. And, you know, an AI model isn't going to help you with that. Like, you're going to literally have to call some people like me with experience who know how to like work through and troubleshoot the software that's been in the house for a long time, you know. And same thing like in legacy companies that are constantly doing mergers and acquisitions of other companies. And then now their IT department's got to merge technologies with others, you know, and you can have all the AI predictability models there are. But like at the end of the day, is AI going to trump just like instincts of different people who know that's going to be a good person for the long run as an asset for this team? You know, because here's the fear is like, and I get this all the time, is that is AI going to replace me? And like what you're saying, it kind of feels like you're saying that, yeah, the AI model is going to find out exactly when you could be replaced versus, you know, there's still some human elements to like making good judgments on who's right to be part of the team and who's not. Don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, the latter part, what you just ended with, clearly, I think, you know, the human in the loop, the human in the role for guiding an organization's strategy and trying to look and look in advance and actually make decisions, whether aided by AI or data. I think we need to make sure that the checks and balances there for humans to make those final decisions for quite some time. I wouldn't put it past AI to be able to sort of plug the dam and put on the duct tape where needed for those old legacy mainframes, right? Eventually we'll get there, but people are looking so far forward now that filling the gaps on some of those problems that we've had from the past that are just nuances, you know, we'll get to those eventually. And I think AI will definitely be able to help. With the bigger thing there might be to look at your organization's resilience plan and make sure that you're actually planning for that. You know, as we recognize that, you know, we've got a knowledge base and a knowledge share internally that is aging out because it's in a human's head. You know, I would advise that it's a bit best practice anyway to figure out a way to codify that in a systems place for the organization rather than just in your human assets. And that's irregardless of AI, right?
Right. So when I'm listening to that, I'm wondering, does it make sense to have one person guiding the ship, or do you do it by a committee, or, you know, who's making the decisions on how to shape and manage this technology? When I'm talking internally, human resources, and just in that framework.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a gap there right now. You probably hit it on the head, which is that like many of the organizations I'm working with, when it comes to doing an evaluation of assessment of where they're at, leadership is missing. And when I say leadership, I mean the authority that can make the decisions, but that has the capacity to, even if they don't have the skills themselves, understand the technology, be told and be able to solicit that information out of their teams to understand what they're making decisions on. Right, that's what we're missing right now, is that level of acumen across many of our mid-sized organizations. And that's not been a problem, because we wouldn't expect those types of organizations to be able to staff that level of skill. So what we will see is an advancement and a maturity of our IT staff to start to look less at doing the nuanced coding and trying to recognize syntax issues in code, right? But we'll be progressing their ability to be strategic in their decision making. And so we're going to start fostering a whole new level of IT leadership that is less about the ones and zeros in the trenches, and finally able to aid the rest of their senior leadership team, their stakeholders and ownership in making, you know, resoundingly well, good decisions for their companies around IT.
So let's take, for example, the IT team. You know, there's a big initiative right now of diversity, equity, and inclusivity. And what does that look like within a closed model, you know, HR standpoint? And like some ideas that come to mind for me, like if I had to hire a bunch of people out of college, and these days I don't even want to say out of college anymore. I just want to say young people at this point, because you can learn trade so many different ways. College is not the only requirement now to get hired these days. But for young people, and you're trying to look at making sure you have a balanced team. And, you know, what comes to mind for me is like the insurance company. The insurance company has a lot of actuaries that literally sit there and figure out when you're going to die. And, you know, they put a monetary value on that, and that's kind of policy they like to write. You know, and so does AI replace that and put it into HR? Like, what kind of, like, when does this end?
Well, what we're allowed to do with AI, what we will be allowed or restricted from doing, put aside for a moment, we know that one of the largest problem areas we need to solve for is the bias that's thrown into AI. And here's the unfortunate truth, is that I think that until we're able to, the responsibility is going to be on the governments and the largest organizations that are out there, right? Like the monoliths that can put this stuff together and build modeling that can account for the biases at a subgroup level, at a jurisdiction or regional level, at a zip code level, even at a household level at times. Right, many of our regions, many of our places around the world, in the US alike, we're going to see a lot of the GarageBand AI tools that are extremely powerful and do amazing things and deliver tremendous benefit either in the workplace or in our leisure space as individuals and consumers. And as they come online, this next wave is still going to have a tremendous amount of concern around that, that ethically is the risk, the bias placed inside them until we come top down. We've worked on numerous sets of data for the healthcare space, and tried to do predictive analytics, utilization of AI and workflows that will unearth patterns to try to identify likelihood of the next world health threat event coming to bear, or, you know, unearth new patterns around disease movement in the world. And the only way that we're able to be successful at all was with a comprehensive set of data and eyes on it governing how to do it. So I think we're going to see that there's going to be amazing innovation for another year or three. But we're going to see that the governance side of it and the regulatory space, it's going to require that everybody come together in ways that we haven't come together before to eliminate the biases to the degree that we can use these tools, and assure that the other controls are in place, in addition to help filter out the 10% that is probably continuously going to be human related for the foreseeable future.
Sure. So on the healthcare side of things, that, you know, that opens up a whole nother can of worms that I would love to talk to you about. That's why we're doing this, right? It's to have a great conversation on AI and really talk through some of these tougher subjects that a lot of people are like nervous about, right? I'm sure you see that, you know, in the conversations you're having with friends and family. On the healthcare side, you know, the privacy discussion doesn't stop just at like what NVIDIA is doing. I just saw an article, you know, where here, let me just pull this up. NVIDIA announces the AI-powered healthcare agents that outperform nurses and cost $9 an hour. Okay. So I read that article and I feel like, you know, that's clickbait. You know, like I feel like they're just trying to get eyeballs. But the real question or the real concern I would have is that sounds like, oh, I'm putting fear into AI replacing jobs. And I'm, again, all focused on AI and privacy, where if I need a kidney and all of a sudden the AI machine says, ah, oh, John, you know, you don't have that many years left. We're going to give the kidney to somebody else. And you're like, whoa, wait a minute. But I'm like a high value person. And they're like, oh, we don't factor like that. We don't talk like that. So I don't know. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, John, I missed the last minute and a half of that. I know you were leaning into the NVIDIA work, and there's some wonderful progress and innovation happening over there. And this stuff is just mind-boggling where we're going in every area of medicine. And let's not also forget that those practitioners that are working hard in the trenches and in the labs, those same organizations are working as hard utilizing AI to try to market out the clinical side of it for clinical studies and solicitation of use of those things. So there's another whole side of AI on that front. But I think that we've seen some amazing stuff in that space, and it's not going to stop. What people need to do from a righteousness sort of standpoint is just assure that they're asking those same questions to the AI, knowing that if they flip the signals and flip the switches and threw a binary zero in there instead of a one, what kind of outputs are they going to get on the negative side? And that's how we can look at what kind of controls are necessary for that place. But we'll see an advancement of spending being put into that, both to progress and move it, but alongside of it, I'm sure it's going to be a lot less. But I'm hoping that we'll see, you know, the traditional 10 or 20% being put into standing up the guardrails to assure that those research studies and groups and the outputs of those work are controlled for the health of and well-being of everybody.
Got it. All right. Are you ready for the first question from ChatGPT to Scott? Are you ready?
Oh, let's hit it. Yeah.
All right. How do you envision AI impacting insurance practices in healthcare and its relationship with providers?
That's a hard one. Right? It put me right on the spot with that one. I think it will. I think it definitely will. For the last 5 or 10 years, we've been trying to work through the cybersecurity space and looking at the automated practices to try to showcase evidence of controls for privacy and security across other areas of technology and business operations, and allowing the insurance providers to see and potentially use that to help qualify individuals, right? Like I know my insurance in some areas could go way down if I can just show them an attestation that great practices are in place. And we had a wonderful framework for that, that was sponsored and controlled and potentially even certified or regulated by a middleman body. And whether that's a quasi-government group or the government itself, I think we'll see that in this space. So we'll definitely see, and I think there's a lot of people working on it right now. We'll see some controls, and we'll see some suggestions that, you know, if I'm an insurance company and I don't see X, I can charge more for Y, right, for those types of policies. So we're definitely going to see that type of conversation, you know, front and, you know, face forward now. And we'll see those types of things being considerations. It's going to be another year or two, I think, before we see best practices develop. I guess I'm probably way off in a year or two. Things are moving really fast right now, right? 6 months to a year, the best practices on that start to develop and be circulated amongst the associations that help oversee the insurance sector.
You know, for personally, Scott, I hope that through AI, more people get the surgeries and get the coverage that they need from a health insurance perspective, because I feel like sometimes people are just predestined to always say no. Some of these companies and some of these, you know, departments within the insurance companies, because that's just what they've always done. But maybe if you model it out a little bit longer, the insurance company might be able to see that, hey, if we cover this, it's not nearly as bad as we think it is. You know, and I mean, there's just numerous cases where I think it's just been etched in stone in history. We never approve these type of claims. And you know, through some AI modeling, you could see, oh, yeah, I guess it really doesn't affect the needle whatsoever. let's go ahead and approve this.
I think there's many reasons that the data will be collected and people will be doing the research to determine, other than the traditional existing conditions and comorbidities that might currently be engaged, like we're every day going to see new data points that somehow have correlation or causation to health conditions and issues, right? It could be that I and the type of chair that I'm sitting in now, or the color of the paint on my wall, eventually someone has drawn research to suggest some impacts on my health as a result of these things that are part of my everyday life. And eventually, through the social medias, the platforms, the systems I use, the cameras and security doorbells in my house and all these other things, we have access to that data. And you know, the people are recognizing, the people in the systems are recognizing new patterns that develop. And so anytime that data is available, people are going to question. We're inquisitive. We are going to ask, what relation might this have on my health? I'm a practitioner in that area. I want to know. And so, you know, I'm excited to explore all those connections. And I'm even more concerned about how we might jump to conclusion based on the connections that are drawn. But I think you hit it on the head, John. It's like we might see that there are, in fact, relevancies to some of these new data points that can be suggested about somebody or a subgroup of people, and how it plays out in the real world about actually impacting coverage is going to be an interesting one to watch. But it may be that if you have enough of that information about everybody, we're going to have these policies that are so fine-tuned that will make up for it in other areas of our health and wellness.
Okay. Well, ChatGPT let me know that she has another question for you, and I love the questions from ChatGPT. Go ahead.
How do you think AI will change the roles, responsibilities, and efficiencies of healthcare providers?
Well, we clipped a little bit of that already, suggesting that you know, people's jobs might be changing. I'll again relate it to my work that I do. I'm finding myself. Well, maybe we can even take this back further. Let's take this back 10 or 15 years to navigation systems. I can't find my way out of a paper box these days to find the nearest Starbucks, right? Using mapping systems is native part of my lifestyle if I'm going anywhere I haven't been before, where previously my internal compass would get me in the right direction and I'd be able to kind of find and navigate my way there and use my own acumen, use the stop at the local gas station, ask somebody and have those human interactions, and I'd be able to solve that problem for myself. Taking that to my practice of security, privacy, risk management, I am finding myself on a day-to-day basis more, I don't know if reliant is the right word, or dependent, but I am including the outputs of AI more on a day-to-day basis with my oversight. And what I'm doing is I'm changing the way I work to be more synergistic with these outputs of AI, to recognize that my job is now to synthesize through this and be a good translator and communicator and ask the questions around accuracy of this system. And in fact, where I may end up being, and I am in many of these circles, is I need to, and it is my job now, right? It is my job to give back to these systems, to tell them how wrong they might be, or to advocate for a specific viewpoint in these systems. And so I think that we're going to see this in healthcare, where those line workers that might be nurses or doctors practicing in a clinical setting every day may now be instructed or required to use technologies to feed back into the system. And this is how OpenAI went through its first success so fast, is they put very, very small triggers in there of feedback up, you know, good, bad, on particular outcomes, right? And that was how they went to market so fast with OpenAI and ChatGPT. And so we may see a scaling of that type of utilization of the practitioners that are currently the subject matter experts in these areas. And their job may shift to be more about instructing the AI to get the quality output systemically than actually giving, you know, the care directly to the individual. And we'll see another segment of healthcare workers focus simply on that human interaction. We've known for years, and you know, there's a stigma about doctors having a hard time, or patients interacting with doctors and surgeons versus nurses, and right, kind of that human factor and the touch points. of nurses potentially being a greater value to the human and putting the smiles on the faces. So we may see that wave of healthcare worker takes a new shape, and we in fact see the benefit of having more and better human interactions with other humans in some role that doesn't exist in the traditional capacity of nursing or doctors right now.
You know, that's interesting that you bring that up, Scott, because yesterday I was talking with one of my AI buddies, and yes, I have more than one. And I was talking to him. He works in healthcare. He's actually just came off a project in healthcare regarding SMS, and which is texting. And one of the things that they surveyed is, do you prefer to talk to an AI chatbot over a person? And it's going exactly to what you just said about what they found is 7 in 10 people prefer to talk to the chatbot, because we have these, we as people have biases. Like if we talk to an old doctor or a young doctor, or doctor talks to this type of person over that type of person, you immediately approach the conversation from your own personal bias. But if you're talking to a chatbot who has no feelings and no, you know, it's just your straight standard what have you voice or whatever they got, people are less likely or more open to listening to the medical advice through the bot than they were from the practitioner, which I found fascinating. And I never really thought about that. But I guess just like you get on the phone with your cable company and you're asking for tech support, or you get on the phone, you know, you're trying to cancel your cable and you try to do that, you got to talk to somebody and you immediately get, or you know, your phone company, or you get in a battle mode almost, you know, like you're like, well, what part of the country are you talking to me from? You know, and we have these biases, you know, and the same thing goes in medical, like just to exactly what you're saying, like, you know, if you have the AI bot doing some of this communication in different roles, does that help overall, where people are actually hearing what they should be hearing and not getting bringing different elements into it?
Yeah, I don't know. It's I think we're going to see that shift in the service industry, right, of being more customer centric. We've lost that in the last 15, 20 years. My first job was at a grocery store bagging and scanning groceries. And I worked for an organization that was at the time very like the most important thing was the smile to the customer. Right. And over the last 20 years, the nature, at least in our society here in America, is like we are independent. We need to stand on our own. We are quick moving. We need the stuff done. I go to the groceries to buy groceries, and we've lost so much of that customer centered care, right? And that service element. And so what we just talked about in medicine is something that we can broadcast in every area of our lives to build better human interactions. So, and I hope that is a necessary outcome of AI being applied, right? I think that what we'll do is we'll see that opportunity. I don't mind personally having the ones and zeros drop me the hard facts. How those hard facts are delivered to me is something that matters, particularly around my health, right? Like it's a very emotional, stressful, and that level of connection I might need with a human to get direct responses immediately on where I might be able to go based on what they tell me is not something I'm going to be well accepted of if it's just AI giving it to me. So,
well, you know, and that reminds me of Siri, right? You know, like on Siri, you can pick all the different voices. You know, you could pick whether you want a man or a woman, or you know, same with your like map navigation. You could pick, you know, what accents you want. You know, it would be interesting to where you literally go in and just pick your own, you know, voice or your own whatever makes you feel comfortable. And you just have that every time.
Now, right? Like the technology is there for that, where not only is it going to... Yeah, it won't just, and it could be my voice, but it'll also, it's at the point now where we're also able to see the inflection point represented, and we're seeing those represented based on the situational awareness and the context of what is known to the AI. So it can read the same two lines two different ways, depending on what it's been told to interpret around my current state of stress, for example. And that could change moment by moment based on what it told me just before. And so we'll see that. Are we going to accept it eventually? Unfortunately, I think we will. We're going down that path as a race. But I think for some time, you know, I can tell you that when I see and I'm given and delivered that information, it's still just ones and zeros. I know enough and have the wherewithal to know it was programmed to just do that. Therefore, I'm not getting the emotional support I need out of it. I'm still getting the facts I need, but I'm not getting the support I need comprehensively for my health.
Sure. So, Scott, do you have different voices for your map navigation versus your Siri?
I never made it to that point, but it's become so much easier now that I may. I helped a lot of friends set that up, right? And some of them wanted the bad words thrown in there and all that to spit out at the right time until their daughter was driving the car, and then it changed and they went back to the norm. But yeah.
Or what if you had like a childhood memory of like the certain caretaker from your childhood, you know, whether it be, you know, the older grandmother or your, you know, nice church lady or whoever. I mean, whoever. I don't know. I'm just coming up with stuff. But you have somebody like that, and then you're able to find that or mimic that, and that's how that person talks to you when they're talking about your healthcare. You know, like, it would be interesting.
Yeah. Well, now we get into that digital space, right? The combination of physical and digital. And I hope that I'll have some content pushed out in the next week or two around this, where there are some amazing benefits and chemicals to be released from hearing my grandmother's old voice, you know, while I'm driving, the comfort that goes along with that. There's absolute value there. Is it going to help me drive better? Well, I suppose that two tiers away from that may come some safeguards, right, that actually do help me drive better. But on the wrong day, having that voice may be a trigger to something else, right? So it's questionable, back to, you know, the ethical use of that information and the strings that it threads and conversations we can have another time about that side of the house.
Yeah. And these are great conversations to have, because that's where you're blurring, like you said, the digital or technology versus reality. And we've had other people on other episodes, which I strongly recommend other people checking out, of talking about augmented reality, virtual reality, AI, how do the three work together? How do they not work together? What does that look like? You know, which reminds me of the TV show on Netflix, you know, Black Mirror. You know, like, there's a lot of different things going on here all at once. But, you know, from, you know, what we're talking about here, ChatGPT has a question regarding healthcare, and ChatGPT is such a good listener that I will let them ask the question that they want to ask.
What regulatory challenges do you foresee for healthcare companies implementing AI?
Cost is probably going to be the first and foremost. We spend a lot on, again, the marketing and the tech itself, but assuring that we have that still considered overhead of the controls and the guardrails put in place is something that is still going to be not an afterthought. It'll be there, and people will know that it's necessary, but we're going to want to see the innovation and see some economic boosts. And unfortunately, it's still a let's wait for the issue and then put our controls in place in some areas there. So we take a look at some of the impact areas. They're the same ones, right? They're really the same impact areas that organizations need to control and tend to. And it has to do with, from the privacy space, you've got the loss of personal data, the control, consents, discrimination and bias, as we talked about, the loss of trust and confidence, right? That's the big one, is any errors that you might make. Yes, there might be compliance fees and regulatory concerns there, but you're also going to lose customers. And so, you know, those areas are going to be the first things that we tend to cater to. But we'll have a whole new wave of technical controls that need to be put in place at the AI level for the training data, the algorithms and the models, the embeddings, the data processing and inferences that are made more than anything, like the new data that AI creates and then uses later. There's already some wonderful practices that aren't necessarily well known and adopted yet to help with the inference data being less reconnectable and relatable to the known human that was the origin source of PII or personal data. And so from a privacy perspective, we have some means that we can employ now to try to help solve those things. And they should already be things that are in place and are for the higher maturity organizations and enterprises. Back to access sharing and collaboration around data use and access, your third-party management and your regulatory governance practices that you have. All those areas of the traditional control of risk management, control of data, data management, security and privacy programming. If companies have not addressed that at this point in time, they need to now more than ever. So as long as they are making a reasonable progress in taking measures to put up, stand up a program and start to dive in, I mean, right now, I'm still asking for that. The largest of organizations that are leading the trend in the research, I think that they need to step it up about two or three notches, and many of them are, by having the right review boards and control processes and governance in place.
There is so much to unpack, you know, around this conversation. And when you're talking about the privacy in healthcare, and you're talking about AI, and you're talking about cost savings, there's benefits, there's things to be nervous about, and there's things that need to be discussed, you know, on biases and what have you. But I think, you know, like based off of this conversation, on this show so far, we've touched a lot of different areas, and this has been really helpful for me to have this conversation with you, Scott, that, you know, just talking through some of it that I didn't even really think about. And one of them was, you know, the type of voice that could be used in healthcare to help lessen the biases and be more open to hearing some of the, you know, what the doctor or the nurse is trying to tell you. And so with that said, we're going to move on to a new segment that we have that we want to do with you, Scott. So if you're ready to transition to our game, it's our new Fast Five with AI. And ChatGPT is going to ask you five rapid fire questions. You only get one word answers. And we want to hear how you do. Okay, so Scott, are you ready to play our new Fast Five with AI?
Does it matter if I am or I'm not?
Scott, that is not the enthusiasm we're looking for here on this show. Come on now.
All right, bring it.
All right, here we go. One word on AI's impact in healthcare.
Great.
Okay. One word for privacy's role in AI development.
Priority.
Awesome. One word on the most critical AI ethical consideration.
Bias.
One word for healthcare's future with AI.
Door opening.
Good. One word on overcoming AI integration challenges.
Programming. And what I mean by that is evaluation and assessment under governance.
Awesome.
Well, that was very good. I like that you paused after every question and gave a meaningful response. So good. Thank you, man.
Really good.
That was great, man. That was great. So, any parting? What's that?
Oh no, that wasn't as hard as I thought. Thank you. Ooh, made it through.
Well, is there anything else that you would like to parting words that you would like to say, or also on top of that, if you could tell people where they can find you and reach out to you if they have questions about anything that you discussed on the show today?
Sure. Hit me up on LinkedIn, Scott Gallant, or keedsystems.com is my website. You can find me out there. And now this has been wonderful. I think we just need to be thoughtful about our moves as individuals and consumers in adopting these technologies. But of course, more so as businesses. And if you're not on the wagon right now, certainly you're trying to jump on and see where it goes. And I think a lot of us don't know yet. But my parting thoughts as a practitioner in the risk management space and even still further in the privacy space is just understand your needs around privacy. There's a lot of opportunity here to stray from your purpose and your business's objectives. And we don't need to do that. Just try to find mechanisms that might allow you to optimize on the practices in the business that you're trying to provide today and extend out and maybe add a little bit more value. And to do that, understand those privacy needs, the legitimate case for utilization of personal information, where it's stored, know your ecosystem and your processor and controllership, who's in charge of data at what times and what third parties are using. And then if you can identify those things, the conversations around AI are at least going to be contained within a window. And you can have the talks about core tenets for privacy around transparency, purpose and limited use of information, data minimization, security, accuracy of information, and the accountability side of it, and the data subject rights, right? And so everything I just said is baked into all the frameworks that are out there. Nothing new on that front. But if we can start with that, it's a baseline to walk into the appropriate use of AI in specific situations.
All right. And Scott, where can people find you?
Again, LinkedIn, Scott Gallant, or keedsystems.com.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. Well, with that said, I would like to thank everybody for tuning in, watching the show on YouTube, or listening on Spotify, iHeartMedia, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your favorite podcast platform. We do appreciate all the feedback from every show. So if you want to follow us, check us out on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Find us wherever, leave comments, and feel free to keep the conversation going, because the whole purpose of our show is to create conversation and education around AI and to reduce the amount of fear about AI as a technology and where it's headed and how it's going to shape all our lives. And with that said, I would like to end the show like I do every show. I ask ChatGPT a famous quote of kindness, because I feel it's really important in the world that we live in today to have a little bit more kindness in this world. And so today's quote is from a well-known quote that promotes kindness by Aesop, an ancient Greek storyteller, that says, "No act of kindness, no matter how small, is ever wasted." Thank you again, and we'll see you next time on Ask Clever Over Coffee, How AI Built This.